Hello, and welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club or common reading program for geek culture. Each episode, we have a topic that four people will discuss from their own geeky, nerdy perspectives. Here's how it works. Of the eight of us making this podcast, we cycle through four each episode, one host who picks the topic, and three representatives of different domains of geek culture. We kick it off with a summary of the topic, then dive into the different domains and talk about how they all tie together. It's all totally subjective and arbitrary. Was I supposed to read that?
Wow, holy shit. That is quite the description that you're making him say.
Yeah, fuck you, Colin.
I find it to be a very fully comprehensive description of the program to which people are currently listening.
It's too comprehensive. Like, yeah, for real.
You're too comprehensive.
So, joining me in this episode are...
Hi, my name's Colin. It's been a little while, but I'm back. And I'm going to be talking about Red vs. Blue, which is a parody of the Halo shooter franchise.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and I'm going to be talking about a spoof on romantic comedies called They Came Together.
Gross.
Hello, I...
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Wait, what? Sorry, I keep thinking someone's going to say something.
Oh, that's great. That's a great introduction.
Hello, I'm Taimul Chaudhry, or Chowder, whichever you prefer.
I prefer.
And my domain will be Dragon Ball Z Abridged, which is a parody of Dragon Ball Z.
Who would have thunk
it? That was such a peppy introduction.
Wow, I love it. All right, and I'm your host, Matt Canavan, or some people call Matt Canavan.
Whichever you prefer.
For this episode's topic, I selected Parody Worlds, where we're going to be doing an examination of all the parrots that are in all the geeky worlds ever.
Shut the fuck up, Matt.
In all actuality, this episode's topic is about parody worlds, and we're going to be talking about the role of parodies in franchise. I'm going to be focused on Harry Potter, to be more specific, the Potter Puppet Pals parody. Potter Puppet Pals was created by Neil Cicierga back in 2006, originally made a bunch of Flash videos, which then became YouTube videos, which became an internet sensation.
Wait, the Flash videos came before the ones with actual puppets?
Yep, they were on Newgrounds.
That's so stupid.
Yo, fucking say that to Homestar Runner, you bitch.
Do my ears detect foul-mouthedness?
I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like, YouTube wasn't immediately a thing.
Newgrounds and E-Bomb's world were before there.
Yeah, YouTube was 05.
That doesn't mean someone couldn't film a couple puppets just because YouTube wasn't a thing.
So, Harry Potter, one of the most successful book franchises of all time.
I don't know, I haven't really heard of it.
Is it new to you?
No, I'm not fucking Colin.
Did you say nudity?
That is exactly the sort of vulgarity that I want to eradicate.
New to me.
Oh, Jesus, alright.
Also, please send nudes.
No, don't! Don't ask strangers in the world to send us nude pictures of themselves! What the fuck is wrong with you?
500,000 points from Gryffindor.
Please send nudes.
All right. Okay, Matt, sorry. Okay, Potter Puppet Pals, fill me in. Harry Potter.
Okay, so anyways, Potter Puppet Pals makes fun of the Harry Potter franchise as a total by making fun of the characters. Harry Potter, in the actual book series, is this confused, growing up guy trying to come to terms with his identity as...
And he's a wizard.
That too. He's trying to come to terms with basically being thrust headfirst into the wizarding world. And he's very, very shy about it. Whereas in Potter Puppet Pals, his puppet character is an arrogant asshole.
Oh my god, he's such a dick.
It's great.
You can have my fist in your face! I'm sorry, Dumbledore, go on.
He's rife with boyish attitude. But basically, throughout the whole Potter Puppet Pals world, so to speak, they're making complete exaggerations of all the Harry Potter characters. This week, I assigned four Potter Puppet Pals videos. Potions Class, Wizard Swears, Snape's Diary, and Neville's Birthday.
Neville's Birthday was definitely my favorite.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Wizard Swears.
I went and watched a couple more episodes.
Good for you.
Yeah,
Chowder, you get the Tryhard Award.
He only did it because he wanted the star.
So the first one you gave us was Potions Class. That was 2006. Of the ones you gave us, at least, I saw that was like the earliest one.
Yes, yeah.
Now, I want to just preface this discussion to the ire of all four of our listeners that I have only seen about 75% of the first Harry Potter movie. So
okay, and that's all you know about, like, Harry Potter in general?
That and, like, general stereotypes. So that's...
Dumbledore dies.
What? Oh my god! I, like, just got invested in these puppets!
I know, it would be pretty traumatizing to have that Dumbledore die.
Oh, absolutely. Because
he'd probably be naked. I'm sad you didn't show us the one with the naked time.
So Potions Class, normally I think we should all talk about this, but this is such a short video. It's like 2 minutes long. It's like just puppets behind a couch against a wall, and it's like really low, like poorly done.
Super low quality.
It's great.
But like, it's just got an organ music version of the theme. Snape. Ugh, I am Snake. Snape. Decides to, well, he's introducing like Ron, Harry, and Hermione to the class, and he's just listing a bunch of funny adjectives.
Wizard liquids.
Wow.
And then HP is like, what the fuck? Is that, are we gonna learn anything, or is it just you saying weird shit? And then Snape is like, I wanna bang some hot chicks.
Even score with hot babes.
And then Dumbledore pops up and asks for wizard liquids. And that's the end of the...
Au contraire, Snape-a-doodle.
Au contraire, Snape-a-doodle. It's done a wonder on me bowels.
That's the whole video.
Yeah, it's great.
That's it.
Don't you understand comedy, Colin?
Here's the thing, though. I think it captures Snape's character in the books and movies really fucking well.
It does.
Yeah, I don't know Snape's character, so this did nothing for me.
Yeah, rest in peace, Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Now I'm sad.
It's been a year. Move on.
Fuck you, insensitive one.
Hey, Colin. Leonard Nimoy.
I think I've moved on. I think it's fine. Star Trek Beyond did a pretty good job of paying tribute to him. Besides, in my mind, Alan Rickman died back in the 80s when Bruce Willis kicked him out of the window. So, like, you know.
Okay. So the next video was my personal favorite, Wizard Swears, where Dumbledore posts a list of all the wizarding swear words, which are completely new to Harry because he wasn't born and raised in the wizarding world, and he's just basically shooting his shit off.
Gross.
And it's really funny. Personally, my favorite swear word is Voldemort's nipple. That and blast-ended skank.
Well, grandmother forbids me from using raunchy language.
Well, your grandmother is a blast-ended skank.
Yeah, that caught me off guard. That was a minute and a half into the video. And I'm like, whoa, this took a turn.
But again, it's kind of playing off that whole, well, in the books and movies, Harry Potter was like this meek guy. And then it's just completely blown up by the puppets.
Puppets blown up his spot.
I say that's a pretty common thing done in like parody things.
Yeah.
When they're parodying a specific character, they take the coming of age main character and then just make them a total dickbag. It's great.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, like Dragon Ball Z Abridged does something similar in the
Listen,
show.
Chowder, you're gonna get your time. You better wait.
Shut up, Keenan.
It's starting. wait, no, I got this. Ready? Cool. Is that it?
I just want the clip of Colin's audio going.
Oh, I got that.
To replay over and over again, like you did with Keenan's cool.
Given my like limited understanding of the franchise in Wizard Swears, right. I jumped right in and felt like everybody like was immediately understandable to me. Whereas in the first one, it was just them basically like saying, "Hey, if you know Harry Potter, you're like this." And it's like they went a bit further and said, you'll like this no matter what, but if you like Harry Potter, you'll like it more.
Yeah, I think that's like, I think the Wizarding Swears one is just like making fun of the all the dumbass terms that they use in Harry Potter, which
oh,
like,
totally, like all the spells and stuff?
Yeah, like all the spells, like, oh, JK used some fucking like, ooh, obscure language, and all the spells are just like Latin. It's just like, okay,
oh, yeah.
Like, or someone could know about that.
Are you kidding me? They didn't know what Latin was back in 1980-something.
If anything, they knew it better. Languages degrade over time.
So, Snape's diary. I really like this one, too, honestly.
I love that one.
But Harry breaks into Snape's office and steals his diary and starts reading it. And honestly, like, Snape is one of my favorite characters in the whole Harry Potter universe. And the way they just captured how much of a sad person
he's so
he is,
emo.
It really showed through.
Like, throwback to the middle school years, holy shit.
Yeah, and like, the thing is, I could totally imagine Snape in the books or the movies doing that, like, writing emo stuff in his diary, you know?
I just, like, there were all these stories about him getting shut down by different women, including Harry's mom, who he's, like, super wants to bone, but also, he lost a button off his...
I lost a button on my cloak today.
And he goes on for minutes and minutes at a time about how his
button, oh, where hast thou fled? Did thee tarry too long amongst fabric and thread?
And I was laughing pretty much the whole time. This one really kind of played up the stereotypes more, and the whole dickbag Harry thing. Not Harry dickbag, dickbag yeah. Harry.
It even did it with Hermione, too, because what does she say?
I know a thing or two about books, and that's a book.
Yes! I laughed so hard at that. Okay, yeah, so toward the end of the video, like, in the beginning, Harry says, oh, yeah, I snuck in Sola's diary. And at the end, Snape is like, you came in my room and knocked me out and rummaged through my stuff. And I'm like, whoa, what the fuck? And, like, it went from Harry being a dick to Harry being a sociopath. But, like, shown through a child's lens.
There was, like, the entry in the diary, too, where he was just like, oh, yeah, Harry Potter and the orange one came and, like, beat me up and, like, peed on me or some shit.
Bother.
Emo poet Snape is, I don't know, I like emo poet Snape a lot. Edgar Allan Snape.
Colin, I think you mean Edgar Allan Rickman.
Well done!
Nice. Well played. Okay, last video. This will only take a second. Neville's birthday.
What do you mean this will only take a second? I have more notes on this than anything. God, I love this video so much. Oh my god.
I really appreciate whenever they make Neville have a different emotion, they use a different squash.
I mean, I just kind of really like how they capture how basically Neville was kind of a bitch in the first couple books, and then he still was when they made him a squash.
And now he's like a fucking heartthrob, like, holy shit.
He is.
He's
right?
Just like, he's in the first movie, he's just like a fucking the doofy kid that everyone makes fun of.
Oh, like you.
But then he ends up being like a lot more important in the plot later.
Oh, not like you.
Kind of a badass, actually.
Yeah. Neville's great.
My grandmother.
But just imagine if they had continued doing Potter Puppet Pals until, like, you know, more recent, and they had to change what their Neville character was and made jokes about him now being, like, this handsome-ass actor, because the actor, like, holy shit, puberty did him well.
They him an eggplant.
Puberty did them all well.
Dick jokes. What the slash, Vic?
Yeah. So basically, Dumbledore makes everyone go to Neville's birthday party. Everyone's just making fun of Neville the whole time.
I speak from the heart. Nobody likes you.
It's true, Neville. It's a fact.
And then Neville explodes.
Neville self-destruct.
What the
Yeah.
Because fucking sociopathic Harry is like, nobody likes you. You're a piece of shit. And Neville's just like, oh, all right, good enough. And then blows up. And
then they start eating him.
Yeah, they eat him.
It's a dark turn.
It's not bad, really. Honest.
Let me try.
It's all that boyish attitude.
Yeah, I remember when I was that age, you know, wanted to eat my friends.
And... Jesus, Chowder.
Yeah, you don't want to be around Chowder once Ramadan is over. It's just like...
Jeez. We can all agree that, like, that the Potter Puppet Pals, it does a pretty good job of exaggerating the characters, like, what makes them who they are. And...
It definitely worked for me.
Yeah. Start talking about the other domains. Colin, why don't you start? You're covering red versus blue, correct?
Oh, yes, I am. Okay, so talking about parody, in my mind, red versus blue is basically the pinnacle of parody franchises. So red versus blue is based on the first person shooter Halo, which was for the original Xbox back in 2001, Halo Combat Evolved. Now that had a big sweeping sci-fi story, but it also had a multiplayer component that got a really big, avid community. People playing together on console in a way they never had.
Like Colin.
And like me, and it really, the community got very vitriolic. And, like, not against Bungie, the people who made the game.
What the fuck does that mean?
Vitriol, like angry, like...
People got angry at Red versus Blue?
No. Vitriolic within the multiplayer community. Where you take a simple game like Capture the Flag, and people are going like, what the fuck? Get me my flag back! Get over it! Like, just bitching at each other.
Oh, you fucking camping bitch! It's a legitimate strategy!
Everyone just super salty, man.
And Red versus Blue was partially a parody of Halo itself, but also a parody of that kind of community. So Red versus Blue is... called Machinima, which is puppetry in its own right. Basically,
they
play the game, and then they record the characters moving and voice over it. The original premise was just you have this big open canyon map with a blue team and on one side and a red team on another.
We set up a red base here is because they have a blue base over there. And the only reason they have a blue base over there is because we have a red base here.
And they have to get each other's flags.
They would have two bases in the middle of a box canyon. Whoop-dee-fucking-doo.
And they're not really fighting or playing the game. They're just standing there and talking.
That's all they ever do is just stand there and talk.
They don't do much.
Yeah.
It's great.
Red versus Blue is currently 14 seasons in. It started back in 2003. Each season plays out like a movie, because like Potter Puppet Pals, each episode is like 5 minutes long, give or take, until recent seasons. That was creepy as hell, Jeff.
Wait, what'd he do?
He just turned his video on for a second and gave me a creepy fucking stare.
Did he give you the same face that he has as his background?
No, the picture he has for Skype is upsetting in its own right.
What is my picture for Skype, actually? Oh, that picture.
Seasons 1 through 5 of Red versus Blue are narratively nonsensical.
Oh, yeah.
Cow-chicka-boom-boom.
Every fucking thing that happens is based on really crappy logic.
Story of my life.
And they care more about jokes than story.
Hey guys, I'm gonna be out for like just a minute, alright?
Oh, that's sad. They are some of the funniest things that I've ever seen. When I started watching Red vs. Blue, I'd only played Halo 1. As far as its legacy, Bungie saw Red vs. Blue and they were like, hey, this is awesome, we want to make this easier for you. So they built in tools in the game to make it easier for them to, like, manipulate the characters. And Red vs. Blue is, one, the longest-running web series.
I did know that.
And I'm back.
Hi, Chatter.
Hello.
And two, I'm back.
So two is, Red vs. Blue is the longest-running American sci-fi.
Really?
Don't know if you guys knew that.
Oh, yeah, yes, okay, is. I was gonna say, I was like, Doctor Who, but no, that's British, okay.
Does it American really qualify sci-fi. As a sci-fi?
It okay. does, it is, well, especially if you look at after the Blood Gulch Chronicles.
Yeah.
And they work hard to, like, take all those shitty jokes, like Tucker's alien baby. They take everything and try to make it into a story. The show was only intended to go 8 episodes, and then it was super popular.
Oh, yeah, and it just kind of blew up. And just to kind of piggyback, Red vs. Blue was, I guess, my first real exposure into the Halo universe, per se.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've never played the
like,
games.
I played like half of Halo 3. And I just stopped because I'm so bad at first-person shooters.
Same.
But, you know, Red versus Blue, it's fucking hysterical.
It is.
Well, that's an interesting thing to point out, because it's just like the mm-hmm. same kind of perspective that Colin has when he's able to enjoy, like, Potter Puppet Pals, right? Like, he's never seen Harry Potter, but it's still funny for him.
Yeah.
And I've never played Halo, but Red versus Blue is, like, one of my favorite things. It's hysterical.
Yeah, actually I don't watch Red versus Blue, so, like,
Get out!
I just want you to know, I always hated you. I always hated you the most.
Chatter, I still love you. You can stay here.
I don't. God, I don't. But, season 14 kind of buttons it all up, because they've had all these big...
Jesus speakers. Christ, you and the buttons!
I missed my button. it buttons all up because they've had all these, like, they just had a 3-season arc after a 2-season arc after a 3-season arc, and it's so mm-hmm. much story. And
would you call
14,
it a tri-arc?
Treyarch, the studio behind Call of Duty, yeah.
That's what I got for Red versus Blue. It's one of my favorite things in the world. And you should all at least watch seasons 1 through 5. It's on Netflix and roosterteeth.com.
Well,
that's very interesting. Thank you, Colin.
I'm glad I could assist. Thank you for having me on this podcast.
Thanks for coming up with the idea with Jeff. Speaking of Jeff, how do you like that smooth transition?
So I was like trying to think of good things to do with parody wise, right? And I remember this great movie that I saw on Netflix called They Came Together.
Kind of a corny romantic comedy kind of story.
That's true.
It's basically a parody of genre. So it's like basically a spoof on romantic comedy.
The term for that is pastiche.
The term for your face is pastiche, bitch. Shut the fuck up. It's very funny. It's with Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler.
That sounds funny.
Were any of you in the group that I made watch that? Chowder, you were, right?
Yeah, I watched it.
It takes like every single cliche from the romantic comedy genre and just like fucking shoves it all into one movie while at the same time like commenting on it and making fun of it. So like, yeah. They've got like a running joke where every time a character leaves the room, the other character will turn to them and go, "Hey, thanks." But then it happens like 6 times.
Yeah, and like all the dialogue in the movie isn't natural at all.
Well, you came in here looking like crap, and you haven't said very much.
You can say that again.
Well, you came in here looking like crap, and you haven't said very much.
Hey, tell me about it.
Well, you came in here looking like crap.
It's like every time they do something, they basically work into the dialogue a description of the trope that they're emanating. So it's like, he's going to like meet his buddies to go play basketball in the beginning of the movie. And they each give him a different opinion. And then like the third one is just like, "Oh, I'm married and it works out pretty well for me. And that's the point of view that I'm representing." It's so funny.
Do not listen to Mr. Chronically Single, always dating some new hot chick guy.
It's super meta, yeah.
I love that kind of meta humor. It's often referred to as comedy for comedians, which is, I know that sounds like a broad thing, but it basically means like, it's funny for people who understand how comedy and how stuff works.
Just like the button.
My button.
One of the first lines in the movie is like, they're talking to their friends and they're like, "Wow,
your story really is like a corny movie."
"I know, the only difference is it's not a movie, it's our real life."
And then she looks at the camera. I rewatched it again today to like brush up, and I forgot how fucking stupid that movie was. It's so great.
How long is this movie? Because I'm going to watch this.
It's
now.
It's like an hour and a half, I think. Would recommend, would watch again. So basically, I chose to talk about that because it's like, when looking at the whole parody thing, I was trying to think of like different forms of parody, whereas Red vs. Blue and Dragon Ball Z Abridged and Potter Puppet Pals are like a parody on a specific piece of media, whereas this is more like parody of genre, which I thought was kind of an interesting breakaway.
And something that comes to mind, another example of that would be the scary movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're totally ripping to shreds the whole, like, horror movies.
Like, yeah, I would say, like, One Punch Man is, like, a parody on anime.
Oh, yeah.
particularly shonen anime.
Yeah.
Much like Dragon Ball Z, yeah.
Chowder, since we're talking about anime, here's a convenient segue for you to ride.
Alright, taking that convenient segue. Dragon Ball Z Abridged is a parody of the anime series Dragon Ball Z.
You don't say.
So, Dragon Ball Z, you know, it's what you expect out of an anime. It's these really powerful guys called Saiyan, you know, saving the world from whatever threat of the arc comes up. Dragon Ball Z Abridged parodies that by editing the anime itself, so it takes like the footage of the anime and like editing that into something shorter, thus it's abridged, and then voicing over the characters with their own exaggerated voices, and then just lampooning the series, you know.
So it's like puppetry, but they just have, you can't actually put your hands in the puppet's butt.
It's like puppetry if you took someone else's puppet show and then gave it their own words.
That's just mean.
You can't put your hand there.
Yeah, abridging is a popular thing in anime. And even Western animation, because it's just kind of funny to like edit it and then voice it in a way it just makes fun of whatever the show was. Yeah.
Are there any like standout examples of particularly funny ones? Is there like a single famous one that's better than the others? Like, I'm not really sure.
The real famous ones would be Yu-Gi-Oh! The Abridged series, which was the one that popularized it, and you got this one, Dragon Ball Z Abridged. This probably is one of the most successful ones. It's consistently funny, and like even people who dislike the show end up liking Dragon Ball Z Abridged.
They have a Naruto Abridged too, don't they?
Yes, I believe they do.
They do, yeah.
It's pretty easy to dub over anime because their mouths don't fucking move with any level of precision. They're worse than puppets.
Well, actually, here's the thing about Dragon Ball Z Abridged. They go through great pains to have the mouth lip sync perfect. Like, if you see, like, some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, they will go out of their way to, like, have the lip sync be right. Like, they'll, like, cut out mouth flaps from other frames and then Photoshop it in. And to put it simply, the production value on Dragon Ball Z, pretty high.
How do you have production value for literally just recording over something else that has
production
value? But they
don't just know
value.
Hey,
like what
Chad Colin,
saying, if you think of something funny, you want to make it work. That's the thing. So that they have a good joke, they are going to make it work no matter what.
Like, it's the same thing as Machinima. It's like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, but Machinima, they liken it more to live stage acting because they'll use like bullet marks on the ground to block things. Like, you need to rehearse it like a play. And abridging sounds more like editing.
And with Machinima, you actually have like control over your character that you can control.
Yeah.
You know, like Red versus Blue, you see their heads moving in time with it.
If you press the Y button really, really fast and aim down, it looks like they're jerking off.
Or what I would say about Dragon Ball Z Abridged is that they do alter the footage when need be, and they certain effects animations in there in order to make the thing work, yeah.
Kind of like how I edit this podcast to make Keenan seem way worse than he actually is.
Yeah, what? And like, and keep in mind, these voice actors, really good. Like, they end up becoming, like, really memorable voices in their own right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is, like, very clever editing, too.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So, Chatter, I have a question. Yeah. How did they... did they make fun of the whole it's over 9,000?
What does the scouter say about his power level?
It's 1,006.
What, really?
Yes, they did. But
how did they do that?
Okay, what they did was like, you know, it's the scene and Nappa's like, Vegeta, what's it say about his power level? And then Vegeta's just like,
it's over 9,000.
Rah, rah. And smashes the...
Even I know that one.
Yeah, honestly, my favorite joke about power levels was, like, the scene after where Nappa's, like, getting his ass kicked by Goku, and, like, Vegeta's like, what the heck's going on? No. And Nappa's like, what? What is it, Vegeta? And Vegeta's like,
power levels are bullshit!
And it just echoes the feelings of the entire fandom, you know?
That's really
like,
funny.
Also, like, Dragon Ball Z is, like, one of the biggest examples, right, of, like, animes being ridiculously over the top. Does it make fun of that whole thing a lot?
Oh, it does a lot. You know, like, Frieza going, this planet's about to blow in 5 minutes! And then, you know, Goku's like, do you know what 5 minutes is? Because it's been more than 5 minutes! All right, so wrapping this up, I'm not sure how to wrap this up, actually.
I think that's good enough.
Well, you should probably cut a hole in one side of it and then get some sort of fastener, maybe like a button, and then put it in the other end, and then...
where is my button?
I'm fucking done.
I mean, no,
guys,
this
is our podcast. Okay, cool. Oh, okay, sure.
I love that. It sounds like you're talking to somebody on the other end of a phone, but we're on the other end of the phone, and we weren't saying anything. God
damn it.
My
mic was muted. I'm so sorry.
What else is new, fatty? Let's get to the good stuff.
So, question number one. What makes a good parody?
I would probably define parody as an imitation of the style of a particular writer, artist, or genre with deliberate exaggeration for comedic effect.
Did you just fucking look that up on Wikipedia?
Yes.
Nerd.
All right, so what makes a good parody? I think Well, firstly, understanding of the material, right? Cause,
yes, absolutely.
Nah, fuck it. Who cares?
Because, you know, we've all seen like a shallow parody where they only really make fun of the surface level details, and it's the low hanging fruit that everyone makes fun of. And usually good parody like goes deeper. Like,
it's like an eggplant.
And
like a butternut squash.
Like a button.
And like takes that core and makes that funny. They find the essence and exaggerate it.
I was surprised how much I enjoyed Potter Puppet Pals, because even though like Potions class seems super superficial like that, once I got like through Wizard Swears, I started to see like, all right, they're hinting at some bigger stuff, even though I don't get it.
Oh, what a fascinating character study this will be.
Yeah, that was actually something that I wanted to talk about, is like, it's an interesting thing with parody, right? Because you take something and you just like make fun of it, but you have to at some level have such an appreciation for that thing to want to make fun of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you were just going to go make a parody of something you hate, right? Like if the writers and Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd, who I'm sure were involved, wanted to go make a parody on romantic comedies because they thought they were fucking stupid, right? Like it would have been torture to sit through.
I mean you could hate something enough to like know what's wrong with it, you know, like you know.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I guess with like a lot of these parodies, right, like I get the sense that the person who made Potter Puppet Pals was probably a pretty big Harry Potter fan, you know?
Otherwise, how else could he capture the elements of the character so perfectly?
The weird thing to me about parody is where you need to capture the essence of something so well. Parody also, I think for it to be successful, at least in my observation, needs to take on a life of its own. Because if all you're doing is riffing on something else, even if you are thoroughly understanding of the source, you're gonna come across as shallow because you're not being original, and originality is part of what makes new things successful, which is why I'm glad we made a podcast talking about things that everyone else has done.
And I think that's also kind of shown, bring it back to the scary movies, they only scrape the surface of all the other horror movies. Oh, let's go explore his house, but let's all go alone. Oh, someone made a noise? Let's go towards it. Like, it doesn't really go into depth or detail.
That's very lowbrow comedy. With the comedy and a parody, it's like a balancing act, because trying to figure out how to say this. Okay.
Words, dude.
Man, it's going to be great. I'm waiting to, like, edit chatter so it sounds like all of his sentences are said really eloquently. Because, like, it's all there. But if you just cut out, like, all the uhs, then it's like you have a full sentence.
Conversely, what I might recommend is cutting out all the words and just leaving the stammers.
Well, actually, I think... Well, firstly, okay, yeah, I do want to apologize for all the stammering.
That's okay, Chatter. We can fix you in post.
Oh, God! That's terrifying!
So the comedy and a parody is a balancing act. Broad comedy can reel in a bigger audience and get them to laugh a bit. But very specific comedy that it's only a few people will hear, understand the joke, it leaves a bigger impact on them. They run this balancing act where, do they be broad?
Do they be broad?
Do they be broad, son?
Yo, do they be broad?
Do they be broad?
How are we doing with time?
We still got like 10 minutes left, dude. You're good.
Perfect. So make this question last 10 minutes.
I can make anything last 10 minutes, but no longer.
This got boring. Let's write a new entry. That's a really fun idea.
So I want to talk about the role of your parody in your franchise specifically.
Oh, I'm ready for this. Does someone else want to go first? Because I don't want.
Yeah,
keep
Jeff, why
up.
Don't you start?
Because I'm eating dinner. That's why.
The return of the pizza. Wait, is it pizza?
No, it's a sandwich.
Ah, oh, fuck. All right.
It's a button.
It's.
I just want my button.
Did thee roll off my bosom and cease to exist? How I wish I could follow thee into the mist.
At least we found out what happened to the button.
Well, I guess I'll kick it off. While some of the videos from Potter Puppet Pals are insanely popular, such as the mysterious ticking noise.
Harry Potter, Harry Potter,
which we didn't watch.
Oh God,
right?
I remember that one.
I mean,
one.
Yeah.
I've
oh yeah, everyone's
one.
Seen it. It's like the 25th most viewed video on YouTube, apparently.
Really?
Holy shit.
Wow, huge.
How does that compare to the numbers on Pornhub with their most viewed video?
Are we including my views or not?
Okay.
I'm kidding.
I'm going to back away from this can of worms I've opened up, can of eggplants.
I think that Potter Puppet Pals, it didn't really have, it wasn't the sole contributor to why Harry Potter was successful. Harry Potter was definitely the reason that Potter Puppet Pals was successful.
That is the most insightful thing you've ever said, Matt. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's like saying Michael Jackson is the reason Weird Al is famous. I mean, duh.
Yeah, circular logic.
No other Weird Al fans in the group.
He's done parodies outside of Michael Jackson that were famous.
It was Fat and Eat It that launched him to fame.
You know, I'm surprised no one chose Weird Al as their topic.
Weird Al would have been awesome.
I also have a pretty big knowledge of Weird Al, but Red vs. Blue is a little better than me just singing a bunch of Weird Al songs on this Skype call.
Yeah, thank you for that.
I've been browsing its Becton, X-Men comics and all collecting.
What Potter Puppet Pals does is it just like reflects things from the actual, in the way that Red vs. Blue did. I don't really think that Potter Puppet Pals influenced Harry Potter, really. Like, it was interesting to hear from Colin about how Bungie actually like incorporated things into the game because of Red vs. Blue.
Right, there was like, it was kind of like this feedback.
Exactly.
Almost.
Yeah, Red vs. Blue is kind of a unique beast because like gaming is still like changing pretty rapidly, and Red vs. Blue came out in 2003, prior to YouTube in 2005. So Red vs. Blue was in a unique position to set a lot of trends, and that's what it did. Where a lot of other things that we're watching, they're more reactionary.
I think Potter Puppet Pals would definitely fall under that category.
Yeah, it never felt like it was trying to push the source material further. It always felt like it was just kind of trying to make the best use of it, which isn't bad by any means.
Oh, absolutely.
I still enjoy it immensely. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's a different thing. They came together, which I'm excited to watch now, and I love that sentence. I feel like it's more likely to inspire things, at least me as someone who identifies as creative. That would inspire me more to say.
I identify as creative.
Are you assuming my creativity right now? Trigger!
Jesus.
I just like that you say you identify.
Well, I don't want to say I'm a creative because that sounds presumptuous and dickish. And I am presumptuous and dickish.
You know, we can't call him that. Only he can.
No, that's a good point, though, Colin, because like, they came together really could. Like, though it's not, I don't think that there's any active signs of it influencing, like, other romantic comedies. It's almost like a, you know, what to avoid if you don't want your rom-com to be cliche sort of guy.
Yeah.
It sounds like a deconstruction.
It wants rom-coms to not follow the formula that every rom-com
Right,
does.
Exactly.
I guess it's kind of interesting. I'm now thinking of it in terms of, like, maybe different kinds of parodies. We got Weird Al, which is just, like, pay homage to the source material.
Right.
They Came Together, which is, like, a deconstruction, and Red vs. Blue, which is, like, an innovation.
Which was reconstruction.
Shut up.
With Dragon Ball Z Abridged, it's a celebration of the original material, and I feel like the influence Dragon Ball Z Abridged has is more on the fandom itself. It's influenced the way fans discuss the material. Another interesting thing it does, it makes certain characters who are kind of forgettable really popular, like Nappa. Nappa was like an unexpectedly successful character, and everyone's like quoting Nappa.
That's kind of like Neville in the Puppet Pals, right? Like, Neville's not by any means a forgettable character, but like his role in the first couple films that had come out by the time these videos were being made, he's just like, he was kind of like a background character.
No, he was the laughingstock. He was the fall guy.
But Chowder, what you mentioned kind of brings up something I was thinking about, and just the role of characterization in these sorts of things. They're recreating characters that exist, but in a comedic way. In the same way that Potter Puppet Pals does. How do you think these people making like these Abridged videos are really trying to take these characters and morph them?
So how they go about morphing these characters? I feel like what they want to do is, you know, he's constantly like this. Oh, really? Really?
What?
Really?
Am I missing something here?
The bag of food was so loud.
Yeah,
holy
of course
shit.
It is. You can take that audio out afterwards.
But I don't want to talk over it, man.
I would say Potter Puppet Bells didn't really do that per se. They just picked a certain isotope of a character, and they just
solid misunderstanding of basic scientific concepts, Matt. Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Isotope. I just said isotope. Archetype. Same thing.
Yeah, man. I hate those hydrogen archetypes and those helium archetypes.
Okay, whatever. So that about wraps it up. At this point, we go into our ratings section, where I assign golden buttons to the representative who best understood or discussed the topic as outlined.
What about our opinions? Don't we get to rate it?
Sure, if you want.
So I'm just gonna say my thoughts.
Say it. Just say it.
So on a scale of golden buttons, is that what we're doing? On a scale of 1 to 5 buttons?
1 to 5 gold buttons, 5 being the best.
I would give the Potter Puppet Pals videos you assigned us 3.5 out of 5 buttons. It
you
would
might
be
as
maybe
well just be 3. Half a button doesn't do shit.
But like, I want to do four buttons. But I really did not like the potion class one. That dragged the whole thing down for me. I'm very against that wizard liquid.
I mean, granted, that was also the first video.
Oh, it showed.
You know, it got refined.
Oh, contrary, yes, Snape-a-doodle.
I'm going to give you 3.5 buttons. I don't know what happened to the other ones. Neither does Snape. Take it or leave it.
Voldemort's nipple. Okay, Chowder.
All right, so I give it about 3 golden buttons out of 5. I think that... Well, it was funny. It didn't like have me like busting my gut out laughing. So I feel like 3 stars is average. So yeah, three stars.
You couldn't even give me half a button? Come on.
I'll give you half a button.
Sorry.
No, because then it would have added up to 1 total button, and it didn't deserve that.
Yeah. Jeff?
I agree with Chowder. I think I'm going to stick to a rating of 3 buttons because I'm not some nerd who does half buttons. We're not doing a 1 to 10 scale. We're doing a 1 to 5 scale.
Fine. Round up to 4 buttons. I give it 4 buttons. God.
3 buttons just because, like, it doesn't make the same kind of commentary on the original source material that I feel like a lot of other parody does. In that way, like, it does kind of sink into, like, a Weird Al territory where it's, like, it's funny and it's great, but, like, Weird Al, like, just takes songs and then he changes the lyrics.
Don't shit on Alfred Yankovic. That man is 5 buttons through and through.
To a certain extent, that also wasn't its purpose, you know?
Right. Yeah. I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying, like, in terms of parodies, it's not my preferred cup of tea, if you were.
I assigned an even bigger golden button to the representative who I felt best understood or discussed. I'm totally reading this. So the even bigger golden button, it's about worth 4.5 buttons, because that's bigger than any of these assholes could give me.
Aha, half buttons, motherfucker.
I'm giving this to the person who I think best understood Potter Puppet Pals and its true deeper meaning. I would say I would have to give that to... I would have to say Jeff.
Yeah! Oh. Yeah, first episode so with hard. a gold star, and I fucking get it. 1 for 1, baby. That's what
and
I'm talking
Matt,
about.
4.5 buttons.
Matt Canavan?
Yes.
You're fired.
Okay. Nice knowing you. Well, that about wraps it up. Thank you for listening. Again, I'm Mame, and this week's topic was Topic.
No, don't! No! You're supposed to fill those in! Don't just
That's
read
what
this!
Said.
Don't read the brackets!
It's just a parody of the prompt, so, you know, it's fine.
Ah.
Thanks, Chowder.
We're parodying our own episode here.
So, thank you for listening. Again, I'm Matt Canavan, and this week's topic was Parody Worlds. You can check it out at, I guess YouTube, because that's where Potter Puppet Pals are. Our next episode will be hosted by Chowder, and we'll be talking about Scott Pilgrim and visual storytelling.
Watch the movie adaptation. You don't have to read the comic. Although, it will help.
Well, you don't have to do anything. That's what we'll be doing.
So, if any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review. If you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com.
You know, Matt, that was a lovely button on the end of this episode.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Matt Canavan, featuring Episode 1 alumni Colin Ketchin, Jeff Levitt, and Taimal Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer. This episode is sponsored by My Cats, stepping on my iPad as I edit this episode. Now, the podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Colin Ketchin, 3 episodes in a row. Hot streak! And featuring original music edited by me. Now, we have kind of an announcement. We've been doing these episodes bi-weekly since December, and we are going weekly! Yes, all 4 of you listening can tune in next week for a new episode hosted by Chowder. It'll be about Scott Pilgrim versus the world. If you want to see Jeff's Skype picture from around minute 17, you can check out our Facebook page. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Geeking Program. And if you're listening on iTunes, leave a review, share it with a friend. We're having a lot of fun doing this. We just hope you are too, so spread it around. That's about all for this week, so please do not send us your nudes, and thank you for listening to this.
8, 9, 10. That was pretty good.
That was almost beautiful.
Almost beautiful.
Okay, you guys ready?
Nope.
How about now? Okay.
Moderately. I'm moderately ready.